The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment below. I may be able to respond, or Fran may be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment, you'd like to contribute information to the show, and are listening on Facebook Live, you can comment below right here, or you can just send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. We are recording our shows on Monday now using Facebook Live and then playing them at our normal times on Wednesday at 11 a.m. at WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. It is March 20th, 2023, to be replayed in 2 days on WHUS 91.7 FM. You can also listen to past episodes on WHUS.org or on your favorite iTunes or Spotify or FMRadioFree.com. Okay, Ron's Rant of the Week. Well, you know what? There are times in our lives, there really are times in our lives, where we just don't have anything to rant about. Unless you have something to rant about, Fran. We could rant about the fact that it's so bright in this room, getting weird shadows on my face, but that's not really the way this works because it's more of an audio show than a video show. So, whatever, no big deal.
I want to go outside and ride bikes, and it's going to be warm enough, I think, today and tomorrow, and I have to work.
Oh, the rant is that you have to work. That's what your rant is, because rant has to be like a rant. You know, it doesn't. You know, you got to have, it's a minor complaint of sorts.
My working is getting in the way of my bike riding.
Yeah, your working is getting away in the way of your bike riding. Well, there are solutions to that, but Fran doesn't want to do that because she has to play dress up at work. So we can't really solve that problem. You know, you ride your bike to work.
Riding your bike to work isn't fun.
What else is not fun? If you're so far away from the microphone, no one can hear you.
Yeah.
There's my rant for today.
Riding your bike to work is not the same as, for me, it's just 2 miles and it's stressful and it's not worth it.
Yeah, but you know, if you have an e-bike, you just kind of buzz over there without any effort.
And then
you can ride in your regular clothes.
Where do you put the clothes? It's a whole thing.
Yeah, it's not a whole thing.
It doesn't really
work. Anyway, once again, if you wish to ride your bike to work, you can always figure out a way.
That's the way it is. Sure.
No, it's not just that. I have friends that work at Pratt & Whitney that ride their bikes to work every day.
I have friends that work at the insurance companies
in Hartford. That ride their bikes every single day to work. It's like you just figure it out. We have our friend Amanda who rides her bike to the law office in Colchester.
Different kind of job.
There are ways that you can do it. But anyway, and there are always great excuses for not doing it.
There are some people, it's not practical. It's not like I don't ride my bike. You're acting as though I don't ride my bike.
I know you ride your bike, but you know, you can use it for more than one thing. That's all. Anyway, we're going to move on and we're going to go on to the positive side. Spring is right around the corner. As a matter of fact, it's so close to being around the corner that it's at 5:24 p.m. today.
Yes, it is.
It's going to happen. So that's really exciting because spring is spring, and that means that we're moving our weather patterns a little bit more towards a warmer climate, and that makes it much more conducive to riding your bike. So that's a really, really cool thing. And let's see, other positive things. Did you see what happened in the Milan-San Remo yesterday? Oh my God! Yeah, it was really cool. We'll talk about it later in the show. I'll get there. And I know basketball, but the UConn men last night advanced to the Sweet 16. It's the first time since 2014 going to the women's game tonight in Stores to hopefully cheer them on to their Sweet 16. So go Huskies. Yeah, I'm wearing a UConn shirt today. Yeah, UConn. Not just UConn. It's UConn basketball shirt. It's kind of a big deal here. I know, you know, bicycle riding is also a big deal, and that's why people listen to Bicycle Talk. I get all that. But I have other things outside of my bicycle world that I pay attention to, too, which I think is healthy. So anyway, it's really, really fun, and I am just in complete awe of these athletes and just what they can do with their bodies and how fit they are. And, you know, it's pretty cool. It's totally cool. And whenever any of them have some sort of a strain or sprain or injury on the court, guess what the first thing they do is? They put them on a bicycle. They put them right on a bike. They've got these little spin bikes next to the court that the trainers have. And so, you know, it always comes back to the bicycle. That's all there is to it. That's all I can tell you. Mechanical Minute and Cycling Tips. All right, what do we got? Is my e-bike battery safe? God, there's a lot of press out there right now about e-bike batteries and burning down buildings in New York City and on and on and on. So what we're calling it is the National Lithium Ion Battery Epidemic. All right. Oh, God. So I decided to look into this a little bit and see what we've got here. And there's a Streets blog thing right here. I know that we're going to need. Here we go. So three things to know about the National Lithium Ion Epidemic. And we're just going to kind of carve right into the show right now. We can start with this because it is a concern. I have an e-bike downstairs. It's an antique. But, you know, it has a fairly stable old battery with some new old battery in it. It seems fine. The charger seems fine. The, I guess, mixing chargers between devices is kind of a bad no-no to do. So you want to try to avoid that if you can. I have heard that. But anyway, you know, we're moving forward with the sustainable transportation thing, and a lot more people are getting e-bikes and e-scooters to get themselves around in the cities. So this has created a concern, and that concern is that there's more fires happening because of people maybe using their cell phone charger to charge their e-bike. Not a good idea. Use the original charger that came with the e-bike if you're going to do that. Very, very important to do. So there's a popularity of so-called micro-mobility devices, and it's soared across the U.S., so have the number of fires associated with lithium-ion batteries that power them. Vehicle batteries have certainly been linked to hundreds of deadly blazes, and once they start, the chemical reactions that happen within the battery cells make them significantly more difficult to douse than traditional fires. Very interesting. I should have this conversation with Mark. I'd like to know more about this. Micromobility fires have been implicated in 11 documented deaths and 251 injuries in New York. Tragedies that the Consumer Product Safety Commission, Commissioner Rich Trumka, was right to call heartbreaking and preventable in a recent memo. Some e-bike advocates, though, say the scale of the epidemic is far more modest than the headlines suggest, that the misleading headlines are distracting both from the societal benefits e-bikes and, from e-bikes and finding real safety solutions to prevent future disasters. This article, which is on Streets Blog, by the way, it almost seems like fear-mongering, said John Seaborg, product safety manager for the e-bike manufacturer Havsco. Electric cars catch fire and the media goes crazy. But people don't stop buying electric cars. But they do start thinking that e-bikes aren't safe. Everyone wants to jump on the hype train. And once again, there it is. Any excuse whatsoever not to ride a bicycle. So not good, not good at all. Here, so there are some things that you need to know. E-bike fires don't always involve e-bikes. For most people, the word e-bike rightly evokes the image of a two-wheeled vehicle with pedals and handlebars, small electric motor to assist riders more easily to reach a top speed of 20 miles per hour. Among law enforcement and the media, the word e-bike is sometimes used incorrectly and used as shorthand for a much wider range of micro-mobility vehicles. That's the new word, the new right. Micro-mobility vehicles. It includes electric mopeds and scooters capable of reaching far faster speeds and which use far larger and more combustible batteries than you'll find on a pedal-assist bike. Very interesting. This is exactly the challenge we have as an industry. This is the Larry Pisa said from the head of the e-bike committee at People for Bikes in an interview with Bicycle Retailer last year. We are working hard to be responsible. Then we have rogue companies that bring in electric scooters from China without any kind of regulations, and it creates a bad image. And the ones that don't meet U.S. standards. When an exploding battery is attached to a bike, it's often attached to cheap imported one from Chinese sites like Alibaba, which are allowed to enter the country under the infamous de minimis rule, a carve-out theoretically aimed at saving people who buy products like alcohol and tobacco for personal use from red tape placed on large-scale importers, and a loophole in the federal law that's having a dangerous impact on the e-bike industry, allowing overseas manufacturers to sell direct-to-consumer e-bikes that cost less than $800 without going through the normal customs process. So anyway, groups like People for Bikes are fighting to exclude e-bikes and their batteries from the de minimis rule. But experts say the battle will be difficult to win. In the meantime, the CPSC, Consumer Product Safety Commission, is essentially begging overseas manufacturers to rigorously test their vehicles before they enter the U.S. to make sure they adhere to fire safety standards. And lawmakers are introducing legislation to give those standards the force of law. So here's the other thing. They're rare, and the root cause is socioeconomic. It bears repeating that just like car crash deaths, all e-bike battery fires are 100% preventable. And even a single person being harmed by one is unacceptable. It's also important to note, though, that outside New York City, micromobility fires aren't an epidemic, despite what alarmist headlines might suggest. And with proper regulation, they won't likely be. So this is the problem. Most experts believe that battery fires are so heavily concentrated in the Big Apple for the simple reason that there are way more e-bikes within its borders than any other major city in America, thanks in large part to New York's roughly 65,000 diversitas, deliveras, I don't know what that word is, an exploited group of workers that relies on pedal assist technology to make their living. So what we're doing is we're singling out the fact that the people that are using the bikes are delivery people. The people who are using the bikes are financially challenged people because it's you don't have to own a car. It's a good thing, right? Well, it's a good thing until they're buying really crummy product, and then it's a bad thing. So those workers are typically underpaid and forced to depend on cheap and potentially dangerous models that traditional bike shops refuse to repair when they break. To make it through a typical 10 to 15 hour shift delivering food to wealthy customers from far from their homes they can't afford, they also often charge their bikes at hubs run out of private businesses, even if that means piling their batteries alongside dozens of or hundreds of other storerooms strung with dangerous extension cords that can easily ignite. So, you know, the problem, again, you got to be careful about how you're charging the full thing. That's the way it really, that's where your problems lie, is in the charging. That's where the fires start. That's how it works. So, in cities like Denver, though, e-bike fires have grabbed virtually no headlines, beside the fact that the city gave 4,734 residents vouchers up to $1,700 to buy them last year. Go Denver. Yeah, let's hear it. That's in part because of a smaller bike fleet overall, but also because the program required participants to buy from certified bike shops that are highly unlikely to sell a defective bike. And because of the socioeconomic factors affecting Denver's delivery people differ significantly from the challenges facing New York riders. So big shout out to Denver for getting very responsible with this, for guiding people through a bike shop to be able to participate in the program. Great thing. As I always say, support your local bike shop. This is a good thing. Another thing which I have mentioned on the show before, I entered the e-bike business long before anyone even knew what an e-bike was. I worked for a company out of Texas, which was actually a power company, not really an e-bike company. They were looking for carbon points, so they started an e-bike import company. Don't even get me started about how bad that is in the overall view. But, you know, the solar business does the same thing. It's just part of selling carbon credits. That is another path which we will not go down here on Bicycle Talk, because we're here to talk about bicycles, not corporate business and corporates and how they use up their carbon points. Anyway, let's go forward on this. So this comes back to when I was working for this company, the person who was the tech guy, who basically was our tech support for 7 different brands of bicycles. He would give seminars at sales meetings and explain about the chargers and about why you don't mix and match chargers. And the big one that he really, really encouraged is if you are recharging any kind of a unit whatsoever that is like a bicycle, or he felt anything else, he was a little paranoid about it. And for good reason, I'm sure. I think he set fire to his house. But anyway, he said, put the charger and the battery on a concrete floor. That way, if it does ignite, it doesn't have anything to then additionally ignite in the building. So he was ultra conservative about it. And you can be too, if you want to be. But when you take a look at all these delivery people and they're stacking bikes up because they all live in a big tenement house or whatever, and they're all stacking them up one next to the other, once one starts on fire or explodes, the rest of them are going too. So it just turns into a real tragedy. And that's unfortunate. That's very, very unfortunate. So that's what's going on in New York, but it looks like Denver's got a handle on it. So there are solutions to the problem always. There's also a statement from the Los Angeles Fire Department saying that it does not have any data about fires attributable to e-bikes. And it's worth noting that New York City's fleet of 4,000 electric city bikes has not had a fire. Hello. So those city bikes that are supplied for people to, you know, hop onto, you pay a yearly fee or a monthly fee for it, and then you have a fob or you have a code with your cell phone, and then you can ride a bike anywhere you want in the city. Those programs are going to expand, and apparently those bikes don't have a problem, but that's because they're a higher quality bicycle. So again, it has a lot to do with cheap knockoff product coming out of places that you probably shouldn't be buying them from. So, not that I'm trying to promote the bicycle industry, but I am always trying to promote the bicycle industry. I think it's a great place. I spent my life there, and that's a beautiful thing. Let's see. I thought I had something else in here, too, that I wanted to bring up. So, Consumer Reports... back to e-bikes. Here we go again. Malfunctioning lithium-ion batteries are increasingly popular for your transportation and have been linked to numerous explosions, blazes, and little is being done to reduce the danger. Gotta love Consumer Reports. Or you gotta hate Consumer Reports. Yeah, I think Consumer Reports started out as a really good thing, and then I think they kind of got weird. But I remember many, many years ago, I was working for a bicycle company. I'll tell you who it was. It was Fuji Bicycles, Fuji America. And back in the days of Ken Maria, if any of you out there are ancient like me and remember the bicycle industry back then. We got a terrible Consumer Reports rating on one of our bikes. I think it was the Absolute. And it was, they said, do not buy this bike. The brakes don't work. This, okay, so doing a little deep dive into it and figuring out exactly why they felt the brakes didn't work. First of all, they said the brakes didn't work. They gave all these listings about how they didn't stop you. They grabbed weird. They did this. They did that. So Fuji was concerned. So they did a little, you know, dive into it to figure out what's going on here. And come to find out, guess what? The bicycles and products, all products, gas grills, whatever it is that they're evaluating other than cars, are assembled by employees of Consumer Reports. Not bicycle mechanics, not professionals, but employees of Consumer Reports. So there would be an in-house, non-biased look at everything as they were reporting on a product. Well, that right there took my last copy of Consumer Reports and put it into the wood stove. And I said, that's it. You know, these people are just doing this without proper professional education to the product itself. That's just really not the way to do it. Bring it down to your local bike shop, you have them assemble the bike, and then you take the bike out for a ride, and there you go. Well, come to find out, it was a mechanical error that was causing the problem with the bike. There was a retraction of the information, the evidence that was put out at that time, but once you've read it, it's in your brain. Don't buy that bike because it was rated poorly in Consumer Reports. And people rely on this magazine and this organization to give them information. So when I pull up something from Consumer Reports and it has fire exclamation point, fire exclamation point, fire exclamation point, the perplexing, deadly electric bike problem, I say, pah, again. Once again, if you take a look at the stats, if you take a look at where things are like this are happening, a lot of it is right here again in this article, Queensboro of New York City. It's just, you know, you're not looking at all the facts and you're reporting it to people that they, you know, that they're going to be buying themselves into a disaster. Anyone hear about the Tesla cars that crash on their autopilot and don't even let anybody know that's inside and then the people that are inside are dead? Do we need to, like, you know, let's not look at this way. Again, I think it's a bad rap for the bicycle industry. I think it's a bad rap for the e-bike industry. And I think what it really comes down to is when you're out buying a product of any kind, it is in your best interest to buy something that has a quality rating behind it and a history behind it, and maybe the company to support it when you're doing that sort of thing, or buy it from a legitimate reseller of that product so you don't have the problems. So, in this article, when the lithium-ion batteries used in the bikes are poorly made, overused, or charged too long, though, they can cause fires. It's very violent, very fast. It's hard to extinguish, says Daniel E. Flynn, Chief Fire Marshal at the Bureau of Fire Investigation, New York City's Fire Department. The battery pack, in the battery pack, when they do fail, they can shoot these cells as far as 60 feet, so multiple fires can be related to battery failing. But little is being done to address the danger. Well, anyway, again, here we go. There are preventative measures. They are not being addressed well. Again, once one of these things fires off, then another one is probably going to be right behind it, because fire creates fire, explosion creates explosion. So it's going to happen. And if you have a number of bikes in a line stacked next to one another, all being plugged into one outlet with an extension cord with a bunch of, it's just, you're asking for trouble. So what we need here is better education, because education resolves a lot of problems with ignorance, and ignorance is really the cause of more problems than education is. So let's educate and get people to understand this. And maybe, you know, these delivery people that are using their bikes to deliver products all over New York City, maybe if you tip them better, they'd buy a nicer bike and a safer bike. Just shouting out there to all those of you who are door dashing and calling out your food or whatever else it is that you need to have done. Take care of the people who take care of you. That's the way this works, right? All right. So I'm going to get off of this because, you know, it just really infuriated me. Oh, I had one more thing on the list. OSHA. Yeah, OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. They protect the workers and they protect all sorts of things. And they have a whole article about lithium ion batteries preventing fire and or explosion injury from small wearable lithium ion powered devices. Yeah, wearable could be it could be a Bluetooth in your ear, it could be an ear pod, it could be your cell phone, which is most people have directly connected to their body in some way in a pocket or very tightly next to them. You know, there's a lot of these products that are out there, and they're everywhere now, and it's becoming a problem. But there is prevention. And if you go to OSHA, you're going to look at workplace injuries from lithium battery defects or damage are preventable, and the following guidelines will assist in incorporating lithium battery safety into an employer's safety and health program. Ensure that the batteries and chargers associated with the equipment are tested in accordance with an appropriate standard, where they are certified by a nationally recognized testing laboratory. Well, if you got it from Alibaba, they probably didn't do that. So there you go. Follow the manufacturer's instruction for storage use and charging and maintenance. You know that 12-page manual they give you, or the thing that you have to fold out and look and read everything? Well, maybe you should read it. That's a possibility. Or when you say you accept or decline because you have read this, and everybody just clicks the, yep, accept, go on, because they don't want to be bothered with that. Maybe you should read that. That's not a bad idea. When replacing the batteries and chargers for electronic device, ensure they are specifically designed and approved for use with the device, and they are purchased from the device's manufacturer or a manufacturer authorized reseller. This is not rocket science, folks. This is pretty simple stuff. Remove lithium-powered devices and batteries from the charger once they are fully charged. Just don't leave them charged, plugged in all night. Store lithium-ion batteries in dry and cool locations. Avoid damaging the batteries with devices. Inspect them for signs of damage, such as bulging, cracking, hissing, leaking, rising temperatures, smoking before use. Oh my goodness. Especially if they are wearable, immediately remove a device or battery from service and place it in an area away from flammable materials if any of these signs are present. Speaking of wearables, anybody have a watch? Yeah, that's another one. If the batteries are damaged, remove them from service. Put them in a container, a metal drum. Good idea. Follow manufacturer's guidance on how to extinguish small battery fires, which could include using ABC dry chemical extinguishers, Class D fire extinguishers for lithium metal, dirt, or sand. That's OSHA for you. All right. So that's what they have to say. You know, common sense. Common sense. If I could have only taught a course on common sense, I would be in a very different place these days. But anyway, it's just, you know, they are batteries. They're still batteries. I mean, we used to run into problems with, I grew up in an automobile garage, and, you know, my dad was very, 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 very strict about, you know, when you're jumping a car or recharging a battery, to make sure you do it the right way, because if you don't, the battery can explode. That was a lead acid battery. They still are lead acid batteries in a lot of the cars that are out there. You know, don't put your positive terminal on your negative stud on the battery. Don't do that. Don't do that. It's going to create a problem. So, you know, you just got to use your brains here every once in a while and be careful about this sort of thing. Yeah. So anyway, we're not going to have any more fires due to e-bikes out there, and we're not going to have any more bad press because of it either. Seems silly to me. It did fall under my mechanical minute and cycling tips, which really spilled into the show because I thought this was an important subject that we needed to talk about, because a lot of people are getting these bikes and they should be, it should be well known. I know that I think one of the big companies, maybe the big S company, had a huge recall on e-bikes recently. Because, you know, these things are discovered and then they reach out to the people who have consumed them and to the bicycle shops that have assembled them and let them know what's going on here. So it's, yeah, your battery's probably safe. You've bought it from a bike shop, your battery's probably fine. If you bought it from a reputable online retailer, your battery is probably okay. Everything is just fine. But anyway, it's, you know, it's out there. The information's out there. There's ways to prevent it. There's ways to take care of it. Should you have an ignition of an e-bike battery, you might want to check that out. Next shout out. Okay, here we go. Let's see, make sure I get the right one here. So that is going away. So go Chicago. Okay, why do I say go Chicago? Because there's a Route 53 extension proposal, and it gets, it was a big, you know, increase the road, Illinois Route 53, and it was going to be extended north several miles in the Lake County, a wasteful highway expansion that would encourage more driving and degrade the environment. Now it's likely that a multi-use trail will be built on the right-of-way instead, which would have the opposite effect. The property purchased by the state over the last several decades as the county's population grew is currently owned by the Illinois Department of Transportation. Okay, so as reported by the Lake County News Sun's News-Sun's Gavin Good on Tuesday, the Lake County Board gave its blessing to a plan to turn 1,100 acres, which had been previously earmarked for road extension, into an off-street trail. The vote demonstrates more local support for a greenway idea, which had already been endorsed by a 20-member Route 53 Land Expansion Alternative Use Task Force following meetings last year mandated by the Illinois General Assembly. The Lake County Board's approval makes it more likely the project will garner state funding. The next step for the project will be to send the proposal to the General Assembly, which will likely create a working group to look at whether the land should be conserved as a state trail, park, or open space, and how to raise the money for it, according to the News Sun. So, yay, Chicago. Hey, we had this big road project we were going to put in, but we decided to put in a multi-use trail instead. I can't even tell you how much less expensive it is to put in a multi-use trail than it is to put in a road. And then adding to that, the complication of the congestion that happens when you put more cars on the road and give more cars the ability to go further out into the suburbs, and the problem that it's just, there's a bazillion problems here, and how that takes away from the idea of maybe using a mass transportation to bring people into the city instead of using automobiles, cars, trucks, whatever. It's just that Chicago put the brakes on a project that would have created more problems. And now they're going to go forward with resolving the problem in a great way. What I'm encouraged by here is that as we are becoming more and more environmentally and medically aware that we need to take care of ourselves and also of our environment in general, and we're starting to move more towards this, you know, multi-trail and outdoor usage program, which is just wonderful. This is great. This is a huge boom for bikes. And if I have time later on in the show, I am going to give you a Burke perspective on this. The Burke perspective, if you know the name Burke and you're involved in bicycles, if you don't know the name Burke and you're involved in bicycles, I will tell you right now, the Burke's own Trek Bicycle Corporation. It's a family-owned business, been there for a long time, and there was a statement that was made, and I'll get to it a little bit later on. But anyway, there's just a lot of positive hope going on right now for the future of bicycles and cycling and, you know, the use of bikes for more transportation. It's a good thing. It's all good. So we'll move on from this, and we're going to kick this one out, and we're going to go on to the next item on my list. And the next item on my list is not going to be OSHA. That's for sure. We did that already. Bicycle racing. Yeah, bicycle racing. You know, I'm a big fan of bicycle racing. Also, UConn basketball. But that, we talked about that earlier, and that's why the shirt's on. But anyway, the Milan-San Remo was this past weekend. And, you know, Tadej Pogačar has been just eating everything up this year. He's on fire. He looks like unstoppable. It's truly amazing. If you go to the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, you will see a posting on there of the last 10 minutes, I believe, of the Milan-San Remo race. Well worth watching, because the big guys are in there. It's Matthew Vanderpoel. It's Tadej Pogačar. It's Wout van Aert. And they're in there was one other rider, and I'm not drawing it up right now because my brain is old and can't remember. But anyway, there was one other rider in there, four-man breakaway. It was, you know, they're going real fast. Matter of fact, I have that information here, too. That's kind of interesting about how fast do you go in an incredibly, incredibly fast race. And that the Milan-San Remo, of course, is one of the early season classics here. And so it's 181.49 miles. Just to, you know, put this into perspective, it's a one-day classic. It's a really long race. I have Tadej Pogačar's Strava results here in front of me. And just to let you know how this all works, so 181.49 miles, 6,033 feet of elevation gain, moving time, 6 hours, 22 seconds. Average cadence, this is Pogačar, 92 RPMs. Average, 6,000 feet of climbing, 92 RPMs. His cadence was 92. Then comes the speed. So when you think you're fast, let me tell you right now, you're not even close. It's just not. You're never going to be fast. You won't be fast like these guys are fast. These are pros. They have the best of training. They have the best of equipment. They have the best of support. There's no question about that. But this new breed, this new class that's coming in right now, the ones that set records for the fastest Tour de France, the fastest Giro, and the fastest Vuelta last year, there's a new game in town. Average speed, remember, 181.49 miles, right? 28.5 miles per hour. Do you know how fast that is for 180 miles? I can give you a clue. It's really, really, really fast. So anyway, that's today Pogačar's stats. I looked at Wout Van Aert's. These are all off of Strava, so you can look these up if you're a Strava person. And I saw his results on there. I couldn't find Matthew Vanderpool's because I one time they were broadcasting Matthew Vanderpool's wattage, and it was ungodly hard. I mean, I the average is about 400 watts on a race like this, just shy of 400 watts. And last year at the Tour de Flanders, he got to the cobbles, and when he got to the cobbles, it's a 22 or 23% grade on cobbles, and he literally exploded and let everyone go behind him. He just left the crowd. Well, guess what? He did it again at the Milan-San Remo. They were getting close to the finish line, and he claimed an incredible victory in the first monument of the year, winning the Milano-San Remo for the first time in his career, a devastating attack on the famous Poggio climb proved to be the decisive moment of the race. And Matthew, he bested, oh, that was the other rider, Filippo Ganna, who was in second, Wout Van Aert, and Tadej Pogačar. And he literally left them in his dust. I at 100 and, you know, 70 of the 181 miles, maybe at that point, where does that come from? This guy, when he did it in the Tour of Flanders last year, he went from average of 400 watts of power for the entire race, and he put on an explosive 1600 watts, and everybody said, see ya. I can't do that. 1600 watts. So that's what this guy does. That's where he's at in a race like this. To be able to have that and then to be competing in the world level at cyclocross just a couple of months before, or maybe even a month before, and cyclocross is a one-hour race. Who is this guy? Well, he's Raymond Poulidor's grandson. And this is where the fun part comes. Because Raymond Poulidor, that was his monument to win. It's the only monument that Raymond Poulidor won. He was second in the Tour de France. How many times? I was crazy, crazy, crazy. Because Eddy Merckx was around then. And he just, you know, you got, what do you got? You got two superstars. And one of them just happens to be the greatest cyclist in the world. So there you have it. My opinion, by the way. Many other people's opinions, too. But anyway, you know, he won the race. There's a really, really cool, and I don't know if I posted it or not. I sent it out to a couple of friends on a message board, but I'll see if I didn't post it up. I will post it up. Somebody photoshopped Matthew Vanderpool crossing the line with his hands up on his helmet, like obviously like overjoyed, almost in disbelief. And right next to him was superimposed over an old photo of his grandfather crossing the line and winning back in the day. Pretty cool stuff. Totally cool stuff. So anyway, so obviously, you know, he said some nice things to his grandfather as he crossed the line, and he kept the family tradition going. But wow, incredible stuff. Just totally, totally incredible stuff. So anyway, if you're watching the classics, if you're watching the monument races, this is that time of year. The you know, we got the Paris-Roubaix coming up soon. I love bike racing. I can't tell you how much I love bike racing. I just really love bike racing. It's a beautiful thing. So, let's see. What else we got going on here today? I think I can move on to my next thing on the list. And that would be, what do we have here? So, let's go back to, I talked a little bit about how, you know, we talked about that Greenway project and how, you know, bicycling is advancing in leaps and jumps in Chicago and, you know, Denver with their big e-bike program and all the things that are going on. So I couldn't help but I pulled this off of the latest bicycle retailer that came out. This was published on the 15th of March by Mark Sani. And this was at Dana Point, California. And it was a bicycle leadership conference that got underway. And this was last week. John Burke, Trek's president, speaking to more than 250 attendees at the People for Bikes conference, peopleforbikes.org, if you're looking for a good site to follow. Very good. He says he's never been more bullish on the industry's future. Good thing for a guy to say who has invested his entire life and banking industry into the bike industry. That is definitely a good thing. He says he continues to be really bullish on the bicycle industry, noting that three factors give him hope: the bicycle's place in improving the environment and its role in easing big city congestion, and the bicycle's potential for improving the health of a rapidly increasing population of obese Americans. Strong words, but there it is. He hit the health, he hit the environment, and he hit the congestion issue, environmental congestion issue. Three biggies, right? The solution has two wheels, a set of pedals, a crankset, and a human body that powers it. That is the solution. But anyway, I'm a bike guy. That's what I do. 42% of Americans are obese, Burke said.
Whoa.
And while the
climbing.
While the federal government focuses on issues like addiction and other maladies, obesity is a major health issue that fails to get as much attention. Trek played an instrumental role in helping People for Bikes develop into the broad-based organization that it's become. But Burke said the industry needs to do more despite a $13 billion federal infusion into biking and walking infrastructure. Company executives need to pick up the phone and ask People for Bike leaders, how can I help? All right. And companies, big and small, need to pay their dues and help raise money to boost the association's impact. Who will do the work? Everybody needs to be involved. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to transform the industry, he said, referring to an unprecedented influx in federal, state, and local funds to improve cycling. I've been talking about this for a while. I started talking about this back when Pete Buttigieg was put into the position that he is in right now. Our time has come. This is it. This is when we can focus the attention towards building cycling in this country to a level that we've never, ever imagined before. This is the thing that I never thought I would see in my lifetime. And now I'm glad I'm around for a few more years because I think I'm going to see a lot. So it's really, really cool. So Chris Speyer, REI's president of merchandising and co-op brands, echoed Burke's theme. It's really difficult times, he said, but the industry needs to balance its short-term issues with long-term gains. We all go further if we talk together. Tuesday night's dinner kicks off 2 days of seminars at the conference ending on Thursday. A key seminar will look at the variety of market data and the best way to plan an uncertain future. I don't think the future's uncertain at this point. I think there's a lot of really positive things going on, and it comes down to the same thing. As a person who has been an advocate for cycling for a number of years, I know there's more out there. You guys listen to my show. I get the comments. I get the positive views of people that are listening to me in this country and all over the world. And they're all saying the same thing. We love listening to your show because you're talking a positive talk, and we want to get involved. And this is what we are doing in our town. And this is what we are doing in our state. This is how it happens. You got to get out there, and you got to just take a day off your bike and spend a day at the town hall. Get out there and do it, because our time has come. as I say in every single podcast. So this is something that we really need to get behind. We have a tremendous, tremendous opportunity sitting here in front of us. And, you know, the way to make the road safer for bicycles, again, it's the same answer every single time, is to put more bicycles on the road. That's how it works. It's because you see them, you become more aware of them, and sure, there's a small handful of people that will be rather upset that we're out there, but the majority of people, they will just look at it like, oh yeah, bikes are on the road now. Now I have to do this. And they'll adjust. They always do. And then they also may just take that one day out of their week, like the Pedal and Ron challenges, and just ride their bike to work and back, or run all their errands on their bike and go, hey, wait a minute. Why am I driving this behemoth around, spending all this money on insurance and gas and maintenance and monthly payments and all? Why don't I just ride my bike? You know, there's always an answer. Always, always. I got to do a little shout out here because it's coming up this weekend, and I told my friend Richard I would make sure that I talked about it a little bit more. Once again, the Natchog Epic of 2023 is this Sunday, March 26th in Thompson, Connecticut. There are currently 702 people pre-registered for this event. So it's going to be a big deal. I'm really excited to become part of, to have become part of this, because it's a really cool thing. We've got a presentation going on Saturday the 25th, and it's called the Bikes Gone Wild presentation. And our friend Chris Britz will recall how he successfully completed the world's toughest cycling event, which was a Silk Road mountain race, a self-supported bike packing adventure across Kyrgyzstan. Chris will have his tricked out specialized rig on display and fantastic photos and amazing route. I'll be interviewing him and making the party festive, hopefully. And then I will also be on the ride on Sunday too. And just so you know, there's the registration on a lot of these are sold out at this point, but there is a waiting list so you can get into it. It's really, really cool. Beginners discouraged, novices warned, weather be damned. The fourth edition of the Quiet Hill will feature some of the modest changes to this exploration of the most formidable roads in Connecticut's northeast corner. So here it comes. It's going to be this weekend. I am so excited to be a part of it. I will be actually on the more 32, I think they call it the express option. It's a 32-mile express option. Yeah, there it is right there. And it'll be at tourist pace with three support riders, that one of them being me. I will be there for that. So that route has six unpaved sections, one of which is challenging, 1,730 feet of climbing in 32 miles. So it's going to be a lot of fun. There's an explorer route, which is 61 miles with 15 unpaved sectors. There's an epic route, which is 82 miles with 18 unpaved sections. There are also five time segments on these things, on that one. So there's going to be time segments on a lot of them too. So if you want to make it into a little race in certain areas, you can. But really, it's just a big party. It's a big gravel ride. And it's so exciting because it's happening right here in northeastern Connecticut. And I can't wait. I can't wait. Exciting weekend coming up. Next week, I will report on this, and I'll let you know what happened and how it happened and how people felt about it. Hopefully, I'll get some people to interview, and we can talk about that too. We're going to have a real fun event the night before at the at Pedal Power in Willimantic, Connecticut. So that's going to be a lot of fun. So come check it out. It's put on by Domestique Events. And my friend Richard Fries, big shout out. So Anyway, this is going to be a hot time. You can register, and on Bike Reg, there is still registration open. There is also registration for the event on Saturday, because we may have a space issue. So if you wish to come down to the talk and learn more about what Chris has done, then you should probably sign yourself up so you can come in. I believe it's free. So you can come check that out too. Very, very cool thing. It does extend my event calendar here a little bit by going in this direction, but I thought this would be important because it's, you know, it's a big deal. It's kind of a big deal. It's local, it's coming up. It's gonna be a lot of fun. Remember, the Taipei show, the physical show, is March 22nd through the 25th. That means it's just a couple of days away. There's also a digital show that will start also March 27th and go right on into April 7th. So you can actually do this not have to go to Taipei. Kind of a nice idea. The Hop River Mountain Bike Race is on April 15th. And it is the very first of the CCAP Mountain Bike Series for the kids. So that's a really cool thing too. On May 17th in our local area, we have the Ride of Silence, which is the International Ride of Silence. So this is happening all over the world, and it will start at the Mansfield Community Center at 10 South Eagle Road in Storrs, Connecticut. Currently, it is the only one in the state of Connecticut. We're hoping for a big crowd. The Yukon Police Department, which has bid farewell to all the students by that time of year, is so excited to become part of this and help guide us through safely on a 3.5 mile journey, quiet journey through campus. Yeah, but this is the hardest part. Pedal and Ron has to remain silent for 3.5 miles. Anyway, March 26th through the 29th is the 23rd annual National Bike Summit, and that will be in Washington, D.C., and there is also virtual events there. You can find out more about that at the League of American Bicyclists, and you'll get some information there. The Queen of the Classic is getting closer, April 8th. It's the Paris-Roubaix. Are you ready? Is it going to be wet? Is it going to be dry? Is it going to be treacherous? Is it going to be a classic Roubaix? We'll see. We'll find out. We'll see more about that real soon, and I will be reporting on that too from my perspective. Finishing points. Don't forget about the bicycle game at the Connecticut Historical Society in Hartford. Very, very cool thing to see. The Natchog Epic is coming very, very this weekend. Come see me. You know, you can come to the live pedal power arrangement. Go on to Bike Reg for that. It's going to be a great weekend. I'll say it again. It won't be my last time. You got to get loud. You got to get active. All right. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, price of gas, the lack of places to safely ride your bike, and join the revolution of change. Remember, when you're presenting to your local officials and governments, come with solutions, not complaints or problems. Positive beats negative every single time. Please support your local bike shop. Respect one another. It's 2023. Initiate. Participate. Ride your bike. Tell everyone you know. And finally, take on that Pedal and Run challenge. If you have a motorized vehicle, park it for just one day during the week and just use your bike. You might surprise yourself. Kind of cool stuff. The opinions and views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this on Facebook Live, you can leave a little comment down here below and we'll check that out. Or you can send me an email if you're listening to an audio file podcast, and that would be bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast outlet. Just Google it. You'll find us. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down, the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs, and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening. Hope to see you this weekend.